That trident, Ojasa, with all his strength, Daitya, among the demons, Mahabhata, by the mighty fighter, Arpitam, hurled, Chakasat, shining, Antake, in the middle of the sky, Udirna, increased, Diditi, illumination, Chakrena, by the Sudarshan disc, Chideta, he cut to pieces, Nishata, sharpened, Namina, rim, Harihi, Indra, Vitta, as, Tarsha, of Garuda, Patatram, the wings, Ujitam, abandoned. Translation, hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength. The flying trident shone brilliantly in the sky. The personality of Godhead, however, tore to pieces with his Sudarshan discus, which had a sharp-edged rim. Even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. I'll read the purport, but I'll go back so you get the storyline and then the verse again in purport. Starting with text 2. Correct? Text 2. So, this is Hiranyaksha and Lord Brahma fighting. I'll read the first verse also. Sri Maitreya said, hearing the words of Brahma, the Creator, which were free from all purposes, all sinful purposes, and as sweet as nectar, the Lord heartily laughed and accepted his prayer with a glance laden of love. The prayer of Brahma is, finish this guy. The Lord who had appeared from the nostril of Brahma sprang and aimed his mace at the chin of his enemy, the Hiranyaksha demon, who was stalking fearlessly before him. Struck by the demon's mace, however, the Lord's mace slipped from his hand and looked splendid as it fell down, whirling. This was miraculous. For the mace was blazing wonderfully, even though he, that's the demon, had an excellent opportunity to strike his unarmed foe without obstruction. The demon respected the law of single combat, thereby kindling the fury of the Supreme Lord as his mace fell to the ground. And a cry of alarm rose from the witnessing crowd of gods and rishis. The personality of Godhead acknowledged the demon's love of righteousness. What? And therefore invoked his Sudarshan discus. As the discus began to revolve in the Lord's hands, and the Lord contended at close quarters with the chief of his Vaikuntha attendants who had been born as Hiranyaksha, a vile son of Diti, there issued from every direction strange expressions uttered by those who were witnessing from airplanes. They had no knowledge of the Lord's reality, and they cried, "May victory attend you! Please dispatch him! Play no more with him!" When the demons saw the personality of Godhead, who had eyes just like lotus petals standing in position before him, armed with his Sudarshan discus, his senses were overpowered with indignation. He began to hiss like a serpent, and he bit his lip in great resentment. The demon, who had fearful tusks — he's biting his lip with his tusks, apparently — stared at the personality of Godhead as though he would burn him, and springing into the air, he aimed his mace at him, exclaiming at the same time, "You are slain!" Oh, Saintly Vidura! While his enemy looked on, the Lord, in his boar form, the enjoyer of all sacrificial offerings — he was enjoying the sacrificial offering — playfully knocked down his mace with his left foot, even as it came upon him with the force of a tempest. The Lord then said, "Take up your weapon and try again. Eager as you are to conquer me?" Challenged in these words, the demon aimed his mace at the Lord and once more loudly roared. When the Lord saw the mace flying towards him, he stood firmly where he was and caught it with the same ease as Garuda, the king of birds, would seize a serpent. His valor thus frustrated, the demon felt humiliated and was put out of countenance. Out of countenance. Countenance, you know what that means? Like his full countenance is the features of his face, but it's also the internal, like, you know, confidence. Out of countenance, as he was reluctant to take back the mace when it was offered by the personality of Godhead. He now took a trident, which was as rapacious — lolupam, rapacious, dictionary definition, I looked it up — predatory, or subsistent by the capture of living prey. Rapacious. The trident was rapacious as a flaming fire. And he hurled it against the Lord, the enjoyer of all sacrifices, even as one would use penance for a malevolent purpose against a holy Brahmana. Then, text 14, this one. Hurled by the mighty demon with all his strength, a flying trident shone brilliantly in the sky. The personality of Godhead, however, tore to pieces with his Sudarshan discus, which had sharp-edged rim, the discus. Even as Indra cut off a wing of Garuda. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The context of the reference given herein regarding Garuda and Indra is this. Once upon a time, Garuda, the carrier of the Lord, snatched away a nectar pot from the hands of the demigods in heaven in order to liberate his mother, Vinita, from the clutches of his stepmother, Kadru, the mother of the serpents. On learning of this, Indra, the king of heaven, hurled his thunderbolt against Garuda with a view to respect the infallibility of Indra's weapon. Garuda, though otherwise infallible, being the Lord's own mount, his carrier, dropped one of his wings, which was shattered to pieces by the thunderbolt. The inhabitants of higher planets are so sensible that even in the process of fighting, they observe the preliminary rules of regulations of gentleness. In this case, Garuda wanted to show respect for Indra, since he knew that Indra's weapon must destroy something. He offered his wing. End of purport. So this is Purana morning. I'll spend a little time with describing some of these things. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives a description of how the Bhagavad Purana's description of how the earth became populated. And it's not Darwinian evolution. The fiction of Darwinian evolution compared to the Bhagavatam's description may look like, to the scientists, a piece of fiction too. But here's the description. That the one of the Prajapati, so Lord Brahma had one son. He had a number of rishis. And one of them is Marichi. Not Maricha, but Marichi. And one of the sons of Marichi was Kasyapa, a great rishi, Kasyapa Muni. And Kasyapa married 13 daughters of Daksha. This is not the same, it's the next incarnation of the Daksha who was beheaded by Lord Shiva, when the Daksha part one was the father of Sati, and in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, that Daksha, due to his pride and his material attachments, not understanding the position of Lord Shiva, he deliberately offended Lord Shiva and lost his head. And he got a goat's head instead. So when that Daksha, literally he died of embarrassment. Imagine walking around with a goat's head. Very embarrassing. He took his second birth as Daksha, described in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, as the son of the Prajetas. So, the Prajetas are described in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. This is Purana time, so just listen to the nice stories. The Prajetas were sons of King Prajinipati. King Prajinipati was a mixed religious man. He had devotional sentiments, but he also was very attached to Karmakanda rituals. So his sons, the Prajetas, the sons of King Prajinipati, were sent to assist him in the program of producing good praja. So they were in the process of engaging in austerities so that they could produce good praja, and by good fortune and their good qualities, they met Lord Shiva, who gave them a mantra or a stotra, set of prayers, to that he personally chanted, in order to achieve not only the qualification to produce good praja, but darshan of the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. And so while they were underwater for 10,000 years, undergoing austerities, they were chanting these stotras, and Lord Vishnu came while they were underwater, engaging in their austerities. And there was some exchange, and he offered them benediction. So when they came out of the water, having been God-realized and ready to fulfill the instruction their father had given them with the quality to produce good praja, they saw that the earth, during that 10,000-year period where they were underwater, that the earth had not been attended to and was overgrown with vegetation and trees and forests everywhere. Because their father, King Pujinivari, when they were underwater, was visited by Narada Muni. And Narada Muni relieved King Pujinivari of his attachment for fruitive activities. And he also left to engage himself in the austerities for purification and God-realization. So there was no one tending to the government. So when things are not tended to, they go wild. And so the earth became overburdened there was no agricultural land, just forests everywhere. So with their mystic powers, they generated wind and fire, and like a torch, were burning down the forest everywhere. So the demigod of vegetation was moon god. He came and said, Prajetas, call it. Your purpose is fulfilled. You wanted to clear some land. You cleared some land. So stop, stop. And immediately upon the indication of Soma, they did that. They stopped. So he gave them, in reciprocation, a very qualified wife who could produce very qualified children, and a qualified son was born. Daksha part two, for the purpose of producing praja. So then Daksha part two started producing some praja. And I'm skipping some things, but he began, so the 10,000 sons, 1,000 sons. Narada brought them into his bhakti program, and Daksha then cursed Narada, and he decided, I'm not having sons anymore. Narada's going to mess around, so he had many daughters. The number of daughters was something like 30 daughters, and 13 of those daughters of Daksha were given to Kasyapa. So again, Kasyapa is the son of Marichi, who was the son of Brahma. So this is very, very early. And through these 13 daughters of Daksha, vast praja were produced. Of the 13, two were Diti and Aditi. So we're hearing about Hiranyaksha, who was one of the two sons of Diti. And one of the sons of Aditi was Indra. So these are sisters. Aditi, Diti, now mentioned over here, two other sisters are Kadru and Vinata. That's spelled different than your name is spelled, right? Yours be I-N-I-T-A. This is V-I-N-A-T-A. So, Vinata. And a very amazing set of things started happening. Kasyapa is a mystic rishi. And through these wives, varieties of living entities, varieties of species were produced through Vinata, who is also known as Suparna. Suparna, you can guess. She gave birth to Garuda. And she gave birth to Aruna, who is the god of dawn, or sometimes described as the chariot driver of the sun god, which is the same thing. Because just before the sun comes is the chariot driver of the sun. So before the sun appears, dawn appears. So Aruna is the god of dawn. He's the chariot driver of the sun. Given birth by Vinita. And then there's another sister, another of the wives, Patangi. Patangi gave birth to varieties, many varieties of birds. And Kudru, another sister, another one of the wives of Kasyapa, gave birth to varieties of serpents. And Ananta made his appearance as the son of Kudru. And amongst the varieties of serpents was Kaliya. We all know about Kaliya. So Kaliya and Garuda were cousins. So the whole Kaliya Leela with Krishna involves these two cousins, where Kaliya was very envious. I mean, he was not just envious like a normal snake, he was a maha envious serpent. Such that when Garuda went to the Ramanaka lake to take some serpents for his food, they had a mediation. Conflict resolution. Mediation. And the mediated settlement was that once a month the serpents of Ramanaka Lake would make an offering to Garuda, and he could come and take that offering instead of eating some of the serpents. So that was a peace treaty. And it was different. They would take turns making this offering. When it was Kaliya's turn, he didn't want to make this offering. He took the offering himself. He ate Garuda's offering. Garuda became very angry. So he went to attack and destroy Kaliya. So Kaliya fled. And everywhere he fled, Garuda pursued. And Garuda's infallible. So Garuda was winning and Kaliya was losing. So he went to his brother, Ananta. What should I do? What should I do? You're wise. So Ananta told him, there's this place where you can go where Garuda won't go. There's a lake in the river Jamuna where Garuda won't go because Sobari Muni made this curse. When Garuda was once at that lake taking fish as his food, Sobari was meditating in the water. And it was disturbing his meditation, and moreover, he was concerned about the fish in that lake. So he cursed Garuda. You never come back here again, or once you'll die. So this is a nice example of same message in the purport. That's why I'm telling the whole story. Garuda is infallible. So who can curse Garuda? Nobody can curse Garuda. Just like who can curse Narada? Daksha cursed Narada. But Narada was happy. Because now he can, the curse was you can't stay in one place for more than a few days. So he was thinking, that's very good for my preaching name. Stay only a few days in one place. So Garuda was cursed by Shobhari Muni. You come back here and you will die. So Ananta said, you can go, Kali, you can go to that lake and he'll leave you alone because he has this curse. So this particular point, I'll refer to it in a moment again, but it's the theme of the purport, that a person of culture will honor another person, even if it's like a very unfair, harsh, cruel kind of dealing, because of his position. He's Shobhari Muni. He's a great sage. He's not like a pure Shuddha Bhakta by any means. But he's very great Rishi. So, although he's not a Shuddha Bhakta, but a great Rishi. So he's honoring the curse of the Brahmana. Not because he had to, but because he wanted to honor, he wanted to offer that respect. So now, just another little Hridayananda Maharaj joke or comment is, people ask the question, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? You've heard that one before? It's like at least in America, it's a rhetorical question, like, you know, which do we do first? So they say, well, which comes first, the chicken or the egg? So the answer is the chicken. Because before there were eggs, there were varieties of birds created by Patangi, who, as the wife of Kashyapa, produced them. And then there were eggs. Chicken comes first. So we honor the chickens. We honor the mothers that produce the eggs. And ultimately we honor the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he produces the mothers that produce the eggs, that produce the varieties of species. So, the mention in the purport, I'm not familiar with this narration, but it's, you know, once upon a time, Prabhupada starts it like that, once upon a time. So there was a circumstance where Garuda snatched a pot of nectar from the demigods. So this pot of nectar is the pot of, it's for immortality, or it's soma rasa. Not literal immortality, but longevity. And it's like a heavenly intoxication. Who knows? Soma rasa. So he snatched. And the purpose of snatching was to give to his mother, Vinata, because his mother had somehow been put in a confined position by Kadru, her sister. No details about what that was all about, but somehow one sister, another sister, and she captured her other sister, was giving her a hard time. So to free his mother from that difficulty, that was the purpose. It wasn't for his own, it was for that purpose. So Indra became very angry and threw his thunderbolt. Indra gets temper tantrums. And he threw his thunderbolt. So Garuda is infallible. Shobri Muni can't curse him. Indra can't touch him. But to honor the weapon, here it's an infallible weapon of Indra, he thought it should hit something and cause some damage, so I'll offer a wing. So he did that. And that's the reference. So in the verse is the Sudarshan Chakra of Varaha cut the trident to pieces, just like Garuda accepted his wing being cut off by the thunderbolt of Indra. So the personality of Godhead here is not honoring this demon, that's not the message, by cutting this trident to pieces, but it's the trident that split. But he is honoring. There's this code of honor, some kind of respect for righteousness, or at least, you know, the principle of conduct that's to be observed in fighting amongst Kshatriyas. The principles of conduct are observed. I mean, were observed. Because these, although these demons, their intent is anti-Vishnu or demoniac. That's the standard of demoniac, against the supremacy of Lord Vishnu. They may observe principles of Dharma. And why do they observe principles of Dharma? Because when you observe principles of Dharma, you get punya. And when you get punya, or kriti, you can use it in a duskriti purpose. Just like Jarasandha is a demon because he was opposed to Lord Krishna. But he was known, one of his characteristics was he was very generous to Brahmanas. Why was he very generous to Brahmanas? Because it would bring him kriti, and then he could use it for his duskriti purposes. So when we see people doing things like that, that are seemingly pious, you have to look more deeply. You know, as devotees, we must look at what's the purpose? For what purpose is one doing this? They may do some worship or some charity or some piety. What's the purpose behind that? In the case of Jarasandha, it was so he could do his duskriti program. And in the case of Hiranyaksha, so he could do his duskriti program. He could have more capacity to be victorious. So, victorious against his enemies. And who is his chief enemy? Lord Vishnu. So, Prabhupada taught, when he would use this word rascal, he would say, people don't like when I use this word rascal. But he would regularly use it. It was deliberate. It was repeated. You maybe have seen that little video clip where Prabhupada is in his garden in Los Angeles, your ever well wisher. As a group of professors, one professor says, Swamiji, why do you use this word rascal? Because they're rascal, Krishna says. Well, maybe, you know, you could say mistaken or some word like that. Prabhupada said, the summation of rascal, of foolishness is rascal. So what's the standard? The standard is very simple, he would explain. Do you accept Krishna as the personality of Godhead? Then he's in this category, Deva. And the answer is no, then it's Asura, Sura and Asura. Because Krishna says, Namam duskritanam mudha prapadyante naradhanam. They never surrender to the personality of Godhead because of these reasons. And the summation of these reasons is they're mudhas, rascals. You could say they're ignorant. Okay, the summation of ignorance is this, mudha. They don't surrender to Krishna. And when it surrenders to Krishna, they may not be well educated or but they're to be accepted. So the standard is that. Because whatever kriti comes to one who is not surrendered to Krishna, they'll use it in a detrimental way. And therefore we have problems. We have big, powerful nations like the United States of America, where in name there's theism, but in fact it's, you know, selfishness and sense gratification, because the selfishness and sense gratification don't go with Rishikena and Rishikesha Sevanam. It's inconsistent. It's in name only. So we're, for as devotees, as practicing or cultivating Krishna consciousness devotees, where our heart goes, and then in turn following our heart where our senses go, means our actions and our words and our general conduct within society and the standards of character that we exhibit, along with what is religious and what is irreligious. We're not unconcerned with religious and irreligious. We are concerned. All good qualities follow one who is fully dependent and surrendered to the personality of Godhead. So here we have Garuda, who is surrendered to the personality of Godhead, and he's honoring this principle. Take my arm. Because his purpose was serving his mother, and if he loses his arm to serve his mother, out of respect for Indra, that's okay. Now it doesn't say, you know, did he get his arm back, or because the Lord will protect him, surely something happened, but he made that sacrifice with full, because of full dependence upon the personality of Godhead. There's many examples. I'm not going to, because of time, not going to go into them. Nice examples of devotees making huge sacrifice on the principle of respecting the personality of Godhead and codes of conduct and so on. It's not like, for such a person, it's not a hardship. It's part of their loving relationship with Krishna. So this thing, that thing, is part of their loving relationship with Krishna. It's not an issue. And one other comment that's made in the verses that we read that have no purports is, this is Hiranyaksha, is whichever one, Jai or Vijay, it's the attendant of the person, the Lord of Vaikuntha, the gatekeeper. And now, because the Lord had a desire for combat, for chivalrous interaction, his devotee's taking that role with the Lord. So he's enjoying. The Lord's enjoying. The other's looking upon the situation. Oh, destroy this person. But before destroying the person, he cut his pride. The chivalrousness, the viciousness of his attitude was being curbed by showing you're a small fry. You're puffed up like anything, but you're nothing. So before finishing him, he diminished his pride. First the mace, twice, just then the trident. He's feeling, terribly embarrassed because I'm making all these boastful claims. Nothing I know with all of my might. Tad ojasa, with all of his might. Daitya maha. So he's fighting to his maximum capacity and boop, nothing. No effect. His pride was deflated. So then, here's not just a formidable foe, but here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some acknowledgement, at least, of a superior person. Yeah, some acknowledgement. Because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a discussion about Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. When they were killed by the Personality of Godhead, they thought, here is another person like me who is very powerful. But I'm so powerful, I'm surely more powerful than this other person. By some mystic power, they're assuming this half-man, half-lion form, or this other form, the Varaha form. But it's a mystic power like I have, and I will defeat them. So because they were thinking, Chaitanya Charitamrita purport explains, because they were thinking not of the Supreme Lord, the result was their sins were nullified by being killed by the Lord, but they didn't achieve the abode of the Lord. And thus, it was three times before they returned to the spiritual world. Okay, so nice Puranic morning with all of you. Any comments or questions? Yes, Jai Jagannath?
Maharaj, you're just making this point, a beautiful point about when demons, they perform pious activity with Brahma, so they can get some kriti, use it for the purpose of dushkriti.
Yeah.
But the devotees also practice emotional service. We're performing devotional service, and we also use kriti.
Yes, we do.
And ideally, we want to use in Christian service, but sometimes the nature of getting power is that it has a tendency to corrupt persons who aren't very pure.
That's right.
So how do we protect ourselves from becoming degraded when we're trying to use in Christian kriti, particularly getting proud and losing some of our other qualities we may just start as we know what we need and so on?
Keep your guard up. Or when you see that weed, that tendency, and know for certain that the seed, if not the language of nectar of devotion, is kutasta, palonmukham, and prarabdha. In stage, the seed almost fructified and presently fructified. So know that those seeds are there. And as they guard against the tendency, and when the tendency in fact becomes manifest, remove it by the very root. Not just check the performance of that sense of misuse of some ability or some strength or facility or power or something that comes to one who's done nice devotional service. It's part of growing a garden, is pulling weeds. It's a major part of gardening, is pulling weeds. one needs to know how much water and how much sunlight and so many other things. But pulling weeds. So the garden of bhakti is nurtured by the hearing and chanting process. It's the water that waters the seed of bhakti. But other things will also grow. So it will come, not just might come, because we're not pure. So something comes because of our devotional service, and we can get carried away. So that's the guarding against. But then the positive is the rededication, realignment, focusing, purpose is the shelter of the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. That's the strongest. And from that strength, then one can be, properly attending to the removing of the weeds. If that focus is not there, complacency will set in. And complacency means garden will be filled with weeds. Focus. Recommit. The intention, sankalpa, used to be very clear. Anything else? Yes.
Is it true that I heard that the state of Kalila exists in the islands of rocks of Fiji Island?
Prabhupada comments, some people say, that's as far as Prabhupada went with it. That's as far as I'm going to go with it. Some people say Ramanapa Lake is in the area of Fiji. Anyone else? Yes.
As you were telling, when principles of dharma are followed, punya is obtained.
Yes.
And if it is, there are chances for, if it is like similarly when varnashrama principles are also followed, varnashrama dharma is followed, with not the objective of developing relationship with Krishna. So, again, like with a materialistic purpose for deriving the benefits of
sure.
But then how is it said that the Lord is pleased, like some said there is approach when it is not with an objective of developing relationship with him?
It's not. Did you hear the question? I'll repeat the question. When one performs dharma, one receives the benefit of sukriti. And when one is doing those dharmas, the duties of life, religious duties of life, without the dedication to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, then how is it that some sincere haritoshana of the Lord is pleased by those? He's not. He's not. Now, because what's pleasing is that's commitment unto or surrender unto the Lord. Now, you could say only slightly there's some pleasingness because those vidhis of dharma are coming from the Supreme Lord. So to accept those vidhis of dharma, although my purpose is not to please the Lord, there's some submission. I'm regulating my life based upon some higher authority. It's very selfish, but I'm acknowledging some higher authority in order to get what I want. So some submission is there, and so some pleasingness is there, although very selfish. So it's not very pleasing. Okay. And then with that, because it's not for the pleasure of the Lord, then when that benefit does come, it's misused largely. The benefit is misused. So that's not pleasing. But some solution is there. Therefore, the Brahmana who is guiding should be qualified Brahmana. And when the real problem of the failure of that Varnashram system is the absence of qualified Brahmanas to direct how to apply this therapeutic thing. Just like, you know, one application of what I just said is Ayurveda. Through study of herbal medicine, people may learn this herb, that combination of things makes one healthy. What do they want to be healthy for? Sense gratification. So it doesn't work, because the purpose of Ayurveda is to bring proper balance so that one can achieve the higher purpose, shelter of the personality of Godhead. So the good thing is becoming, you can say, commercialized or prostituted so that the higher purpose isn't achieved. But that's the, you know, that's the medium of our world today. And so as devotees, our focus is to bring people to the shelter of the personality and Godhead. And so the Bhagavad Gita, in the purports of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada doesn't deliberately, whatever it is that he's speaking about, it's surrender to the personality of Godhead. You know, from every verse in the Bhagavatam, every verse, even this, surrender to the personality of God, because that's absent, and when that's absent, it leads to a misuse of a good thing. So we need qualified brahmanas. Any candidates? Any volunteers? Go ahead.
When Srila Prabhupada says that 50% of my of establishing varnashrama is left over, did he mean like, you know, that varnashrama level wherein everybody wants developing that relationship with Krishna, or just a ritualistic word?
Daivi varnashrama. Not because Prabhupada had no interest in mundane. He was interested in transcendental. So where, you know, there's so many verses where the practice of varnashram properly executed leads to devotional service. It leads to elevation of society. So that's what he was interested in. Not just that people, by following the varnashram, fulfill their desires and go to hell. Or get distracted from the purpose of life.
And also in the purpose of Bhagavatam, first and second chapter, when Prabhupada writes, by following the principles of Varnashrama, one can go back to Godhead. So, does it mean again the same thing, like just by the ritualistic words?
No. No. It means. Oh, did you hear the question? You heard the question. You gotta, like, ramp up your voice a little bit so people, others can hear. Through Varnashram, one can come to, there's like some phrases that were left out, one can come to the position of unalloyed devotion. One can, it's a progression that can lead to unalloyed devotion. And when there's unalloyed devotion, one can go back to Godhead. But not just by the execution of duties. Correct? So that's what he meant, Daivi Varnashram, not the worldly kind. And he meant also that it leads to the position of unalloyed devotion. Okay. I'll say the same thing differently. When Prabhupada began speaking about Varnashram, it was the preface was, "My disciples are not chanting their rounds. My disciples are not chanting their Gayatris. What is going to elevate them? Because if they do those things, Varnashram doesn't have the same requirement, those duties. But if they're not doing this, they need to do that. There must be a principle of elevation. Therefore, Varnashram. And then, for society, if they're not going to chant the holy name, leading to the cultivation of brahminical quality of life, then they need Varnashram. It's a preaching platform to bring one to the exclusive shelter of Krishna. For those who will not just take shelter of Krishna, this regulation is required. But not for the purpose of just fulfilling, I want this and that, and so you get a religious means of getting this and that. Dharma pravita kaita vantra. Prabhupada wasn't teaching that. Fulfillment of desires by rituals and duties. Anything else? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.